Mini episode 168 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Outside the Box Score, your home on the web for entertaining sports columns and videos. Follow them on the web at OutsideTheBoxScoreBlog.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Okay, folks, welcome to mini episode number 168 as the Kyle Ross history of SummerSlam anthology rolls on. We're into the different parts of part three on this here. Kyle, you kind of jumped a little bit there when...
As you picked up the microphone, I'm like, oh, I guess we're starting now. Yeah. I was like, are we ready to start? I was just kind of sitting here staring at this glass of water, and I was like, okay. I guess we're going then. It's go time now. So
it is go time. Yeah. We are into, in part three, and we're going to be talking about in 3A here today, SummerSlams 98 and 99. Part three, as you have delineated it, is 98 through 02. The glory years of the company. Now, 02 is after the real glory years of the Attitude Era, but as you said, the best SummerSlam in the history of the company and deserves to be lumped in because it was the combination of the Attitude Era star power and great work rate that converged in 02 to make it such. But 98 and 99 is our focus today.
Yeah, and also it avoided the horrible storytelling that plagued most of 2002.
Yeah.
But I'll say this. Also, for those keeping score at home, and I know everyone is,
yes.
We've been doing five at a time, and then we're going to, of course, kill the remaining nine or ten in one last shot just to give a little preview of what's coming up a little bit later down the road in this anthology. But, you know, I'm excited for this one, but also a little trepidatious because the last time we converged to talk a little SummerSlam, it was during the down years of the period, 93 to 97, and I was really dreading talking about it because so many of those angles that were promoted, as we talked about in great detail there, were such bad ideas on paper, and it's like, God, we have to get through all the stuff like the Under Faker and King Mabel.
Sure.
But yet I thought the podcast came out great.
I thought it did.
I thought it came out great. I thought it was one of our strongest efforts yet.
Yep.
And this one, I'm really looking forward to talking all the great stuff, so I'm hoping we don't screw it up.
No, we'll be fine.
Okay, all right.
The people know.
Can I get
expect
that in writing? Can I get that in writing?
I just have that confidence from everything we've done thus far, from our 16 hours and 20 minutes of WrestleMania history to everything we've done thus far on SummerSlam,
always,
all the stuff before
you
that.
You say that with a little bit of a little tinge to your voice. What did you do to my laptop, you son of a bitch?
Honestly, and that was all me. And that's actually a shoot. I should have cut this into smaller pieces, and I caused permanent damage to this thing, which is manifesting itself to this very moment. But that is 100% on old Ricky.
This isn't in my script, Tony.
No, this is, yeah.
This isn't in my
script, Tony. I'm shooting,
okay,
yeah. I'm going off the format sheet. I screwed up, and it's all on me, and it's one of the reasons that this laptop. Right now, that's why I have Windows Task Manager up as we're doing this.
Okay.
Ramifications of how I've managed this laptop over a period of time because I didn't know better. But 98, 99, good stuff. You know, where it went from 97, you know, it's one of those things where, to paraphrase, you know, the two dudes I saw holding hands walking down the street in Greenwich Village this week, it gets better. Well, yeah, 98, it gets better.
Well, you know, I hope they were holding headed to a Chick-fil-A, by the way. All right.
I don't think they were.
Okay. All right. But here's the thing, and yeah, you brought up where we left off last time, 1997. As we had gone through that entire period from 93 to 94 to 95 to 96, it kept declining, it seemed, every year.
And try something new.
And then it seemed in 97, you know, that was Austin, and you had some, you knew who the big players were.
Right.
At that point. And for the first time, it seemed like there was a little hope for the future.
Yep. Hopey changey.
And in between, in the year that followed, everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because obviously they were the number two company in this country in 1997 for the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
The ratings suggested the gap had never been greater, particularly towards the end of the year. You have, of course, Bret Hart leaves the company, and we don't need to go into a great rehash of this by any means. Everyone knows what happens. But a funny thing happened along the way in early 1998 where, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin ascended to heights, quite frankly, that no one else has ever gotten to. Only Hulk Hogan can lay claim to being in that same league during his heyday. And by the time SummerSlam 98 rolls around, they had clearly reestablished themselves the number one company in this country, where, you know, it was debatable for a long time going back and forth, but WCW really started to hit the skids by this point. I mean, yep. They were putting on some real bad pay. I mean, the Road Wilds, the Fall Brawls of 1980.
Jay Leno in a main event.
Yeah, are just terrible, terrible pay-per-views. So what I like about this period, we talked about last time, terrible creative ideas on mm-hmm. paper, and wow, guess what? They didn't succeed. I'm, you know, again, Undertaker, King Mabel, Lex Luger touring the country in a bus, although they, you know, with a terrible idea, they promoted it well, like we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
SummerSlam, to me, when you look at it as a concept, going all the way back to 1988, what it should be to me, and this might seem very obvious and basic to those listening, but this company hasn't done it all necessarily right all the time. It gives you an opportunity to, okay, WrestleMania's over. It's far enough from WrestleMania. What's your big feud going to be? And you can either blow it off, and you can set up another big match mid-year. It's not going to be as big as WrestleMania, but it can be really big.
Mm-hmm.
And what we had instead up until this time period was either kind of lame WrestleMania rehashes. We saw those a lot with the first ones, like Mega Powers, Mega Bucks. That was basically a fallout wrap-up of WrestleMania 4. Or we had just bad ideas. They did try to make a new big money match, and they were terrible, you know, like what we just talked about.
Well, Shawn Vader.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good idea. I mean, that's the right thing. It just didn't have the sizzle.
Bret Owen was even a WrestleMania rehash.
Or, you know, and they had just bad. Zeus was different. That wasn't a WrestleMania rehash, Zeus. It was their big summer angle. It just stunk.
Yeah.
So they had stinky
but
summer angles.
You know
angles.
What? That's weird, because what you're talking about right there was a mashup between the two. Because Savage, Hogan were also counterparts in there. So it was a combination Big Summer Angle and WrestleMania blow-off.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, I could argue that up until 1998,
mm-hmm.
which the main event of Steve Austin Undertaker was promoted about as well as any SummerSlam main event ever.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember the Highway to Hell, I told you before off air, whenever I hear that song on the radio, and believe you me, AC/DC still played way too much on Cleveland radio, I always think about this match. And this is the first time that they really nailed down the concept of a big summer blockbuster match, I think. I mean, up until this point, they had never really done it right. They had a lot of momentum. Austin was clearly the man coming out of WrestleMania. They had the wonderful feud with McMahon. And The Undertaker was always kind of like looming in the background. It was weird how this was set up, because people forget, especially the way it like kind of what happened afterwards. This was by no means a blow-off match. The Undertaker was always just there. We talked about 97. He was kind of that bedrock. You know, he was the one consistent factor. You had Bret and Shawn turning, Austin ascending. You had a lot of different guys reinventing themselves. Undertaker was getting in there with more quality guys. He was having better matches. And he was the clear number two babyface. And real early on in the summer, they tabbed this as the main event, if you remember. Because they did the angle where this match had already been signed for SummerSlam. And they remember the birth of one of the Vince Russo trademarks, the wacky tag team champions who don't like each other.
Right.
And they won the belts. That was like considered like this crazy thing at the time. Actually, they had done that the previous year with Austin and Michaels, now that I think about it. But they did it here, and you already knew the match was going to happen, so it was kind of interesting. And, this match was kind of underwhelming. It's actually been a long time since I probably watched this match, but it was so well promoted, I think, that it didn't matter. And this is without a doubt one of the best SummerSlams up until this point. All the ones we've talked to, I would rate this as the best at the time. It was so well. You brought up it was in the Garden. That always helps. I mean, it didn't help 1988, the first one, that dog.
Right.
But this one, to me, was so well promoted. They had a lot of over characters. I mean, you know, we can look back and scoff at some stuff that was on the undercard here.
Right.
You know, you had, you know, like Val Venus versus D'Lo Brown. I think like the Oddities. And
Oddities, Kai and Tai.
Yeah. I mean, well, that will never be spoken of again. But but there was a lot of things that were over and that worked. I know that in a couple minutes we'll get into how well Rock versus Triple H was. And how great that was. That was clearly Match of the Night honors. But this, to me, was a perfectly promoted SummerSlam with the right pieces.
Well, and a couple thoughts on Austin Taker. First of all, biggest, as far as I can tell, and this is very ironic, because a couple months later you would see the second Hogan Warrior match at Halloween Havoc. biggest face versus face match since Hogan Warrior at WrestleMania 6, right? Austin Undertaker?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, yeah.
Absolutely, because,
yeah.
Well...
I mean, had there been anything...
The only one during the down period in between would have been Bret and Shawn at WrestleMania 12.
Okay, yeah.
But,
yeah,
but this was bigger. This did absolutely... I mean,
well, they were hotter at the point.
Yeah, they were hotter, and because of Austin, obviously, it gets most of the credit.
Yeah.
But this did bigger business than Bret Shawn at WrestleMania.
That's true.
Because
had
more kind of more main, because of Austin, had more of a mainstream appeal. Bret Shawn was hyped basically as the two best workers. This was more story, you know, whatever the highway to hell, you know, whatever the highway to hell meant. You know, it was funny. It was just an excuse to make a music video to a well-known song, basically. But they just kept saying, look, two big names, they're going to wrestle. This is perfect promotion.
Right. Well, and here's why we're going to spend the rest of our lives glorifying the Attitude Era and eventually being those toothless old guys at the home telling the kiddies, you don't know what great wrestling is. You should see what it was in 1998. You know why? Because I'm going to somewhat disagree with a minor point there and redirect. This was kind of a blow-off in the sense of it was the blow-off of The Undertaker and Austin as faces. The Undertaker would start morphing into as a tweener, and then he would be in a feud with Austin where it would be the face-heel dichotomy in there. But the whole thing of they're running parallel as the top faces of the company, this was the blow-off, and Austin won it. And they continued to go with it then in another direction and reshaped it and kept it fresh. And that was what they were capable of doing.
Yeah, it was bizarre. Remember how bizarre it was? Like, after this, they did that thing where all of a sudden him and Kane, Undertaker being him, and Kane came together.
Yeah.
They did that three-way dance. They got
They'd
the
been
belt
moving
off
towards
Austin.
That. Yeah.
And then, you know, by the... They kind of then rehashed it again in the spring of 99.
Right.
The Undertaker was, as you mentioned, full-fledged heel.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, too, this was not the first time these two had met. It just goes to show if you properly promote something, you know, it doesn't matter.
Well,
because remember, they had wrestled at kind of a nothing pay-per-view.
Face versus face in your house, May 97.
Yeah, and where Austin was kind of the tweener. You know, Undertaker was the firmly
entrenched
babyface.
He had just turned.
Austin had just turned. It was May of 97. It just goes to show you could be a nitpicker and say, well, the first time they wrestled or anything like that. But you had attracted so many new fans by this point that had...
Yep.
I mean, needless to say, SummerSlam 98 was a lot... had a lot more purchases than Cold Day in Hell 97, okay?
Yeah.
So this, to me, is a perfectly promoted main event. It just goes to show, you know, and you know my preferences. You know, I know your preferences. It doesn't have to be the most well-worked match to be great.
Right.
This is the perfect main event in today's, you know, certainly for the year and even into today's wrestling environment.
The other thing, too, is that what's very interesting about this, and this is a nitpicky kind of thing that I'm going to give him credit. I think it's
Austin
kind of cool.
Was hurt, by the way, I think, in this match, wasn't he? If I
remember
correctly,
the knee was bad.
Yeah, and it wasn't. And I remember a lot of people were disappointed with the match,
right?
But it's still okay.
The other thing about this, and you've watched so much wrestling, you'll know what I'm talking about. That this is right before they stopped doing the thing at the Garden. When they shoot at the Garden now, for all intents and purposes, they shoot at the look like any other arena. But at this point, they still had, you know, like the entrance that like Bob Backlund would come out of in the 70s. The way they were shooting it, it still had that classic MSG look to it. It was kind of cool.
It did. It really
they don't
did.
Do that anymore.
Everything looks the same. It's that, you know, when you come on, it's that same wide angle. You're right. Everything's made to look the same. And, yeah, this was a great show. I mean, the wrestling, the in-ring stuff, I think, wasn't as good as some of the SummerSlams we're going to talk about down the line.
Right.
Particularly 2000 to 2002. But there is one great match on it.
Right.
That I think we need to touch on. You know, this is more than a one-match show. Austin Undertaker obviously drew the house. But Triple H versus Rock, Intercontinental title. What makes this match so memorable to me, it's a top 10 SummerSlam match without a doubt. First of all, remember when the ladder match had not been run into the ground?
Right.
This was, believe it or not, only the third ladder match on pay-per-view.
That's right, because it was before
it was only Michaels Ramon.
Before all the Hardys matches.
Yeah, which we'll obviously get into. And look, and that's not to say that ladder matches there haven't been great ladder matches after this. There have been certainly better, and you know, I wouldn't
it's
say
like anything though. You can only see certain things for the first time.
It's the law
once.
Of diminishing returns. Yeah, you know, right. I mean, you know, that's why I think Michaels and Ramon. You know, some people, some newer fans who may not have watched the '94 go back and watch that match for like, oh well, the bumps aren't as good as some of the ones I've seen. But see. The people who enjoy Michaels Ramon the most
right.
are kind of in our age group that watched sure. live and like, I can't believe this is so new.
Because at the time, nobody
yeah,
was doing
it's,
that.
It's, like, it's the old Beatles and Rolling Stones rule. Everyone
right.
thinks they're the best because they were kind of the first to the party.
Right.
But a couple things with Triple H Rock that make it so memorable. One is, it's kind of funny when, this is rare too, where everyone kind of comes to an opinion after watching something and is right. You know, I'm somebody who generally likes to go against the majority opinion, but coming out of this match, and first of all, it's real weird to watch Triple H as a face.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, I mean, he has, I mean, he's been more so in recent years, but there was a while where, you know, it was kind of like fun-loving babyface Triple H, too. This was,
right.
This show was the peak of the babyface DX.
Right.
They all won their matches. The New Age Outlaws won the belts back.
X-Pac beat
Jeff Jarrett. And a pretty
with Southern Justice.
Sounds like something out of your thing. But I think they're working security, by the way, at your Chick-fil-A now. But everyone was of the opinion afterwards, watching this match, these two are going to be the next two big stars.
Yeah.
And what's amazing, you know, everyone's always so quick, oh, this is the next star. And what's so amazing, it may seem kind of basic, is that everyone was so right. These guys, this was really, I remember reading at the time, everyone's like, okay, these two are probably going to go to the main event scene soon.
Mm-hmm.
They did Rock first because Triple H got actually injured in this match and was on the shelf for a little bit.
Right.
And both were. But by SummerSlam 99, both were huge players. And, I mean,
right.
really even before then they were.
Triple H, the winner of this match, was actually between the two, the one that was treading water between then and WrestleMania.
Oh, agreed. This match, this was, it was funny because Rock had come full circle. That's a great point because we need to talk. I think that's actually one of the real keys of this match.
Yeah.
It's a great match. But The Rock, who had debuted in MSG at Survivor Series 96 as the blue chipper Rocky Maivia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got the polite applause there. But right after that, I mean, it was just like, come on. Like, this is a new era. You know, you didn't know it was a new era. They were kind of just formulating the term attitude and stuff like that. But it you know, look, everyone knows it didn't work as the blue chipper. He got booed out of the building consistently. They took him off TV. They'd bring him back as a heel in the Nation of Domination. We talked about that, ironically, to replace Ahmed Johnson because they were afraid Ahmed was going to usurp the heat of Farouk as
right.
the leader. So they're like, well, let's just put Rocky Maivia there because he's innocent. No one really cares about him. And
right.
he wound up, of course, usurping Farouk's seat way more than Ahmed Johnson could have in
but
a million years.
But it ended up being the best thing that ever happened.
Yeah, and, you know, along the way, he starts christening himself The Rock,
yep.
which really worked. But this was the first show where he really started getting cheered as a baby. You know, the crowd really was, I mean, the crowd was started chanting, it was no longer Rocky sucks. There were
right.
actual, legitimate Rocky chants because he was, at this point, he had gotten that character down so well. And if you remember, the fallout that you kind of referenced to start this discussion was, remember, he got, like, he was so over because he did that sort of unofficial babyface turn.
I love those things, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, before a guy, like, officially turns and like that. And in WWF style, a lot of times they've used it as a swerve because The Rock had that pseudo-face period, then joined the corporation at Survivor Series. Triple H in 2000 had the feud against Kurt Angle, then went mega heel again. So it's always interesting to see that, but it's always fun when somebody's in the throes of that whole thing there and all the marks in the crowd are like, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to be cheering for him or not, but damn it, he's just too much fun. I got to cheer for him.
And it will, you know, you don't want to say never
right.
about anything
mm-hmm.
because it's a long life and, you know, who knows what can happen. I don't know if they can ever do what they executed with him. Because, you know, you referenced the Mark stuff. Look,
yeah.
everyone was caught up in it. It was
Rock. I was so into The Rock
yeah.
at that time.
Rock's
yeah.
trajectory.
Yeah.
From SummerSlam. Get the toilet paper out of your mouth, Kyle. From SummerSlam to Survivor Series was so incredible.
Right.
I mean, he just blasted off. It was one of those deals like Austin at WrestleMania 13. You know, you lose the match.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, everyone's like, maybe we were really wrong, and this guy's, like, really good.
Right.
And this was a launch. It was clearly the best match of both of their careers at the time.
It was.
And it was a wonderful blow-off to a mid-card feud because they were the leaders of their respective groups.
Right.
DX against the Nation. It was that was a nice feud. You had the secondary players. You know, you had the D'Lo Browns, the Mark Henrys, the Godfathers on the one side. This was kind of before he went babyface, and then, you know, X-Pac and the Outlaws on the other. It was not only maybe the best mid-card feud this company has ever done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that covers a lot of ground. Folks, that covers a lot of ground. It was also, in my opinion, the last gasp of the Intercontinental title really meaning something. After this match, because remember, Triple H had to vacate the title.
Right.
He gets hurt, and Ken Shamrock wins it. But after starting with that, it sort of kind of descended to mid-card purgatory, especially with Russo.
Yeah. You know,
I think we need to talk about the big differences here.
Sure.
When 98-99 against 2000-2002, Russo was at his height.
Right.
Particularly in 99.
Well,
with the company, and you know, it became just a thing you traded. By 99, it was like switching every week.
Yeah.
The Rock had held the title since December,
mm-hmm.
and had one of the best Intercontinental title reigns of all time, in my opinion. And it just felt like a big deal, Triple H winning this match. Now when someone wins the Intercontinental title, you know, like The Miz wins it the other week on Raw, who cares?
Well, and I had made the snarky comment last time, Austin, Owen, SummerSlam 97, about it being 11:59 of when it meant anything, and you correctly corrected me and was like, no, there was a little bit left. This was 11:59 of when it meant anything.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
Never
meant
I mean,
after
know.
This, because it was funny, they never really, because like I said, he got injured.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was the perfect storm where you had two hot, young, rising stars.
Right.
And they both were, it was so linear.
Right.
You know, they both had groups, like I don't need to repeat the same thing. But it worked so perfectly, and it's, again, one of those instances where everyone really wound up being right, which doesn't happen very often, well, where everyone's like, oh, these two are going to be the next two main eventers. Because
right.
The main event scene, people forget,
yeah,
was like nothing at this point.
It was not deep.
I mean, the only other guys who got any sort of main event time during mm-hmm. this between WrestleMania and SummerSlam, besides Austin and Undertaker, were Kane,
uh-huh.
who had that real cup of coffee with the title.
Yeah, Mankind.
And Mankind.
That was it.
And, I mean, McMahon was the lead heel, and he wasn't a wrestler. You know, the concept of him wrestling, it wasn't until February that he actually worked a real match against Austin.
Well, having said that, and I want to touch about a couple things here before we look at 99, the depth of guys being over in this company, when you get into the upper mid-card and everything like that, Outlaws, Mankind for the tag team titles. Mankind and Kane were the champs, but then Kane did the whole thing where he bailed on him.
He did a storyline no-show, which led to Foley turning babyface.
Yeah, but I mean, the Outlaws and Mankind and, you know, completely over. Shamrock and Owen in the Lion's Den match. That was something that people were really hyped to see Owen get what was coming to him.
It's funny because people, like, you know, the elitists, a lot of people that quite frankly, you know, would... kind of person that would listen to a wrestling podcast or read about the internet will scoff at some of these names, but they were really good. Check yourself, people. These guys were over at the time.
They really were. And another one here, too. You fairly often mention, when we're talking about the Attitude Era, you are correct to remind everybody, because this has gotten kind of swept into the dustbin of history, that in terms of ratings and in terms of other things like that, no worse than a number two or three person in the company at the time was Sable, and how insanely over she was. It blew my mind when I was looking here at SummerSlam 98, the match on here. She was already into the feud with her estranged, real life and storyline, estranged husband Mark Merrow. Mark Merrow and Jackie on the one side. Sable and Edge on the other side. Even then, they saw enough in Edge super early in his career that he was getting paired up with one of the hottest acts in the company. Well, this is amazing.
You know...
I don't remember anything about that feud, but it's amazing to me that Edge was there.
She was a mystery partner. Pardon me, he was a mystery partner.
Okay.
It was weird. Edge, if you remember, and I just watched, I really recommend the DVD that came out. I can't remember, You Think You Know Him or something like that it's called.
Yeah.
I just watched it. It was very good. But people forget this, and they didn't really talk, they actually didn't mention it at all. He debuted, you know, he had those kind of weird vignettes.
Yep.
And he's like, I'll just go along with it. People think I'm some wild guy, I guess, you know, it's better than nothing. He wasn't really comfortable at the time, and kind of in retrospect it showed, because he debuted on Raw.
Yeah.
He wrestled one of the Barriquas, one of the lesser guys, and he injured him. I remember.
One of the lesser Bariquas. Now, there's a redundant
yes,
statement.
Yes, not the king of the triple threat match, Savio Vega. But do you remember this at all? I can't even remember which
guy.
I feel terrible.
I think so.
He did like a pescado when he came down on the guy wrong, and he felt really bad. And because I remember I was real fired up about Edge. I was like, oh, this guy looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
And
they
took him
up to the long trench coat gimmick.
Yeah. He was really – this was a bizarre time period. You say they had a lot of faith in him.
Yeah.
I'll agree with that to a point, but he was a real afterthought in this match. He was not – this. He was, to be quite honest with you,
yeah.
lucky to be with Sable
oh,
in this
sure.
match. I mean, they thought enough of him, you're right, but they were trying to get – this is – what I can't believe I'm going to say this, but it's absolutely correct. They were trying to give Edge the rub off Sable.
And that's amazing to me because
And it really didn't work because by, you know, a month or two later, he was standing
sure.
behind Gangrel and the Brood.
Sure, sure. But, I mean, it was the next summer in Toronto where they did a house show thing where he briefly won the Intercontinental title. We're more than a year out from No Mercy 99, which was the career-making match between Edge and Christian and the Hardys. My mind is just blown that way before any of this stuff, they put him in there with Sable. That's one of those tidbits of history that's just unbelievable.
It was one of those things that I liked him. The company mm-hmm. obviously liked him. But that initial singles run that
yeah.
you were kind of even going into the next year.
Right.
Or even with the Brood, it didn't necessarily click.
Right.
I mean, the everyone remembers the Brood, like, oh, it's cool, it launched Edge. It was always one of those things like, shouldn't they be doing more with this guy?
Right. And that was always the sense, too, you know. And
but, yeah, he didn't really click till it was just him and Christian. They
right.
siphoned off Gangrel.
Right, right. And that was just one of the very interesting things.
That's a forgotten match.
Yeah.
And again, that was kind of a retread from the mixed tag match at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
This wasn't as fun because people kind of were like, understood Sable was a big star.
Yeah.
It was such a shocker at WrestleMania.
Right.
But here it was just kind of like, whatever.
Yeah, there's the phrase again, diminishing returns.
Mm-hmm.
And as we're talking about Russo and we start rounding into 99, diminishing returns are going to be the motto of the day, I think. All right, so when we're looking at 99, Kyle, you've got the setup here for the main event feud. And as you and I had discussed hours earlier off air, that it was inexplicable that Triple H ended up in that spot to many people. But they'd been preparing the push ever since WrestleMania, when he turned on DX, when he joined with the corporation. And essentially, if you go back to the extension of DX and how he was over, and at times the number two or number three face in the company behind Austin, in the full history of it, it's not completely inexplicable that he had been sort of in Austin's shadow until that point.
Yeah, I was going to take a bit of umbrage with the term inexplicable.
Okay.
You saw it coming.
Yeah.
It's just that. And it's funny
people
because
didn't
of,
know why.
of all of the kind of Triple H angst that would come in the years that follow, obviously, mm-hmm. and we'll certainly hit on that mm-hmm. moving forward. That a lot of people, and these were like kind of that casual fan crowd that would sit and watch these pay-per-views at my house,
mm-hmm.
were scratching their heads. They're like, why is this Triple H being pushed to the main event? Like, he's not great. He's not and the thing was, looking back at it, he was a pretty bland heel at this point.
Sure.
It was very clear that the company, compared to things like The Rock and Austin, where it was just a wave, it was just like, you didn't get this. Nowadays, maybe we're just all a little smarter or whatever, more cynical. You always get the sense the company's pushing someone is behind.
Mm-hmm.
You can always tell when you watch Raw these days, all companies behind this guy.
Yeah.
Back then, it just seemed that you didn't have, like in 98... it was just very natural. The crowd was dictating who was on top. You know, it was the company and the crowd was very much in line.
Right.
With Triple H in 1999, he does the big heel turn at WrestleMania, and he was kind of second fiddle to The Undertaker in the very short-lived corporate ministry.
Yes.
That they really, the company, made the decision before the people, the fans,
mm-hmm.
the WWE universe,
mm-hmm.
that they wanted Triple H on top. Didn't you get that?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's very important to talk about.
Right.
That the company, not the fan base, were the ones who initially decided Triple H is going as a main event heel.
Right.
And they didn't obviously have the faith in him, or they realized that, okay, maybe the fans don't buy us, because there are a couple smoke and mirrors they tried here. One was it's a three-way dance, or not a triple threat match, pardon me, in the main mm-hmm. event with Mick Foley. We'll get into the politics of that momentarily. But We should mention, by the way, that the big kind of angle for this SummerSlam was Jesse Ventura. What a big deal that was as the governor. You know, Jesse had
always, It was held in Minnesota.
It was held in Minnesota. He had that big falling out with the company over the videotape royalties, and him and Vince kind of got on the same page. There was a lot of controversy about a acting governor of one of the 50 states of this country serving as a referee for a professional wrestling match. I think that's, I think if you have an issue with that, you're kind of a tool, personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's just me, and I'm a big wrestling fan, so I'm, of course, going to feel that way.
So you would be glad if John Kasich were the special referee at SummerSlam this year?
Well, only if he took a stunner. there we go. But here's the thing. I want to back up before we even talk about this show.
Okay.
6 months, if 6 months prior to this show, you would have told me that a main event that I thought would have been the slam dunk main event of the show wasn't going to be the main event, I would have said, what, are you an idiot?
Mm-hmm.
We always talk about that big summer match. Okay, you got to look forward. The key with Austin Undertaker in 98 is they very clearly, early in the game, we talked about how early that match was announced, and obviously they knew it was going to be their main event for SummerSlam even earlier. You have to have that clear vision. Where are we going to SummerSlam? That's what makes SummerSlam work, and that's why in recent years they failed so miserably.
Right.
But didn't, like, around WrestleMania time, going into that, wouldn't you have thought, I know I certainly did, the main event of this show would certainly be Steve Austin against their big free agent signing of early 1999, the Big Show.
Yeah, but
because it had that whole, you know, people speak with that reverence. I think it almost kind of would have a Hogan-Andre dynamic a little to it, in that it was the big top babyface against the giant heel.
Okay.
I think, I mean, it wouldn't have been, I mean, it wouldn't have been Hogan-Andre.
Right.
You know, I saw you cringe when I said that, but I think it would have kind of had a little of that feel to it, where it's like the big hero against the giant, and that works. And I know there were reasons why that match didn't happen. The Big Show had developed some very lazy habits in his waning WCW career.
He was really damaged, because if there's anybody that went more downhill in terms of perception from the start of the NWO angle to 1999, I'd love to know who it is, because he was the dominant WCW world champion.
Scott Hall.
Okay, but I mean, even in terms of, but in terms of public perception in 99, when you put Scott Hall in the ring, he wasn't seen as a loser. The Big Show, by the very end, and again, and Eric Bischoff in the positioning, the final night that he was in WCW, they did the whole thing, turned on him, you know, and Bischoff's on the mic, Kevin Nash is the corporate giant, because they thought that's what they were going to call the Big Show in WWF. So that was a deliberate attempt to hurt him on the way out the door.
But the
undeliberate attempts, if you will, in the year or two or three previous to that, the Big Show came in with a horrific lack of momentum, Kyle. And that had to play in somewhat.
I'll be honest with you, I completely disagree.
Really?
I don't think anything that happened to him in WCW mattered for WWF.
Seriously?
No.
Okay.
What damaged him was what happened when he came to the WWF. If
well,
remember,
that,
there was
that
a,
hurt also.
There
let's
was
not,
a lot of buzz. There was
that.
A lot of buzz when he came in. Now he did sign. Now you know they were probably irritated what they were paying him. They paid the big bucks. He was. Here's the thing to remember. He was the first big jump, because remember everyone WCW was throwing all that money around for a couple years.
Well, Jeff Jarrett preceded him.
Yes. The first big name to go WCW WWF, because, you know, the prevailing theory was, well, WCW just pays you so much more. We're just go, even if you know, aren't as well promoted, take the money, man. The Big Show was the first guy to say, screw the money. I want to be promoted better. I'm going to WWF. And
another very much shorter guy had the same thought that summer.
And we're going to talk about that in a great deal, because they bungled that as well.
Yep.
But to me, none of that stuff, and I'm with you. Bischoff tried burying him out the door. I remember watching it.
Yeah.
He had that smarmy old look when his feet are up on the thing. But that's fine. That didn't matter, though. I mean, those WCW techniques that were working in 95 and 96 weren't working in 99. You know, Mick Foley, that'll really put some asses in seats, was a disastrous move by Bischoff.
It was, but portraying him as a goof who couldn't stop smoking and eating hot dogs on the way to the ring in 98 was doing nothing for the Big Show.
But again,
then the giant.
Look, obviously there was a lot of crossover between the two audiences.
Sure.
But people were so turned off by WCW that even I think the biggest marks were kind of like, oh, well, that's WCW screwing him up. He'll be good again when he's in WWF.
Okay.
And the WWF did an atrocious job with the Big Show when they were handed. He should have come in. This is my opinion only. He should have come in and been booked like a giant. He was not booked like a giant.
No.
He should have come in and just dominated.
Right.
He like lost to Mick Foley, who I love, obviously, in a Boiler Room Brawl match in Backlash, which is inexplicable. Then he like turns babyface. I mean, he just kept turning him. It was awful. Well, like, I have never seen... I mean, I'm not saying that he was awesome by any means, but I'm saying to me, on paper,
well,
13 years after the fact, Steve, if you would have said in if I'm working in the WWE office in February of 1999, the Big Show's going to come in. First thing I say to Vince McMahon is, all right, he's we've got Big Show. Paul White's coming in. We're going to call him Big Show. I'm like, okay, well, there's our main event for SummerSlam. You know, Austin will do his thing with the corporate ministry. You know, he can maybe he'll lose the title, win it back. Our main event for SummerSlam is going to be Steve Austin versus the Big Show. The Big Show was a bigger star than in February through April of 99 than Triple H was.
Well, give him credit. Long-term planning. They were trying to build stars in 99.
Yeah,
didn't like who they were trying to build.
Yeah, but... Well, and look, long term, they were right. You know, if they were here, they'd all be, oh, you loser. You think you know what you're talking about. You know, take a look at Triple H versus Big Show now. It's like, well, yeah, but it was a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Part of it
they
was,
pushed
too.
Triple H so hard, and they bungled Big Show so bad that, of course, by the end of 99, Triple H was the bigger star. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
I'm saying, and look, Triple H is still around today. Now, granted, he's semi-retired, but he had plenty. I mean, he... And it's so funny that I would have given, quote, given away his spot to the Big Show here because I would have also then in the months that followed given not given him the lead heel spot either, and we're going to talk about who I
right.
would have given that to in a second. But to me, when SummerSlam 99, and we've gotten way off the rails here. This
we're program, setting it up. We're setting it up.
That I would have done Steve Austin versus the Big Show at this with Austin going over. Now, I understand Austin was kind of injured here.
Yeah.
And so what happens is... They do this real half-ass thing where Austin, where Foley wins the title here. He was specifically put into this match because Austin didn't want to do a job to Triple H. Again, he agreed with me,
right.
agreed with us, Triple H. I'm not sure I want to do a big job to this guy.
And Jesse, being a politician, didn't want to raise the arm of a heel at the end.
I think that mattered, too. That's a
yeah.
great point by
yeah.
you. You know, people say that's silly. That matters.
Yeah.
That matters.
Ironically, one of the greatest heel commentators of all time.
Yeah, yeah. And if any... guy would come in, a politician would come in and do that. It'd be Jesse Ventura, but still.
Yeah.
So you had to kind of do that quirky booking.
Yeah.
But to me, it would have been... So Foley wins the title, but Triple H winds up, what, the next night?
Yeah.
They do the thing where he... Because they built Triple H... Oh, you know, they referenced the click incident. Oh, it's so funny listening to Triple H being complained about being held down. That was how they
yeah.
booked it, this going into it.
Right.
But they were really ramming... Look... A few months after this, it's irrelevant because they did the thing with Stephanie.
Right.
And he became a huge star, a bigger star than anyone ever thought he was going to be. And he was totally deserving of the spot.
Sure.
I'm saying in 1999, the big initial heel push he got, you have to remember that a lot of people had a lot of question marks about him.
Okay.
That initial run he had. Remember, they jobbed him to Vince McMahon on a SmackDown.
Right.
For the title, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
He did not... His first initial run with the belt was not that. It wasn't until Stephanie and getting DX reformed as his flunkies, as heels,
right.
that he really started, you know, getting his teeth as a heel.
He gave that promo. I think it was in Cleveland where they really clarified the character direction. I am the game. I study this. You know, I'm the ruthless guy. Who's,
but no one really cared about.
Well,
that.
It took quite a while for it to
yeah,
get traction.
I mean, it really was
did.
Okay, we get it. You're the game. We
yeah.
understand. But I look, and we've kind of spoken very not glowingly about the show. They were at their height right now. The WWF.
Yeah, even with some things on here that you're not much going to like.
Well, the Rock
and Mr. Gunn, Badass.
Yeah, well,
Mr.
here's
Ass.
The thing. People kill these 99 pay-per-views.
Right.
Because of one name.
Right.
Vince Russo.
Yep.
And this was, as
Russo-rific.
Yeah. As you put it, this show is basically 11:59 of his career. He was, you know, he took the job short of WCW shortly after this, and the rest is history.
Yep.
Including his entire career. But I think that's worth noting because, look, everyone wants to kill these pay-per-views. Look, they were at the height of their popularity in 99, ratings-wise. They did their best. I mean, in that summer of 99, they did their best ratings ever. The Austin Undertaker title change they did on Raw.
Truly unbelievable.
Did the most. It was the most watched match they've ever had on Raw. The most watched Raw ever was the Owen Hart tribute show, which annihilated. Here's something that's unbelievable. Do you remember, pop culture-wise, they were at their height, too. Austin was on the cover of Rolling Stone during this time period.
Yep.
Remember? I remember I did a speech, for crying out loud, in college. You talk about different times. I could get away with this. People thought it was like cool and funny on the rise in popularity of pro wrestling in 99. And I remember referencing, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but you can probably look them. They were killing NBA playoff games in the ratings.
Oh, they were.
By like a lot. Not like just beating them. I mean, like they had like three times the audience.
Yeah.
Now, the NBA had a terrible, if you're not a basketball fan, you don't care about this.
This was the nadir of their product.
Yeah, this was the first year without Jordan. And
we're talking about practice.
Yeah, it was like that awful 50-game season that no one cared.
Fundamentals?
Yeah.
Fundamentals are preached by racist white coaches that won't let us allow express
now,
ourselves.
Okay, now you're getting a little off your rocker here.
Okay,
all right, jeez. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum. Okay. But
I can go for some Chick-fil-A right now.
Yeah. 99, the company was red hot. I just think that the Triple H thing was the first instance of the company saying, we know better than you fans. And they'll come back and say, well, we do. Look at Triple H, what a big star. It's like, yeah, but you really rammed him down our throat at first, more so than any other star. I mean, there's guys nowadays, Ricky, they get one negative reaction 1 week and they give up on.
Right.
That wasn't the case with Triple H. What's good for the goose was not good. Has not been good for the gander over the last decade.
Well, you
know I'm right.
I know you're right about that. And again, you know, Big Show, who arguably should have been in the main event, ends up in a match with Taker against X-Pac and Kane. They'd already done a couple of different turns with Big Show. So continuing the downward slide that he was on as the giant in WCW, continuing it unabated through his first several months in the company here. And, you know, you talk about some folks taking a while to get some things right. The treatment that you wanted the Big Show to get in April of 99, he did get subsequently. Problem is it was in June of 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's
way
funny.
Way to go, guys.
It's funny when they do try to do that now.
Yeah.
When they try to book him, quote, properly as a giant. It's like, guys,
you got to do the Men in Black mind eraser thing about the last 13 years.
Yeah, it's like, look, he's been beaten by guys way smaller. Once a giant character, like, with Andre, let's use that. Because Andre is really, fairly or unfairly, the only comparison you can
have
benchmark. For a Big Show.
Sure.
Once Andre lost to Hogan.
Yeah.
The mystique in many ways was gone. It was still there because of how well he'd been protected for so long.
Sure.
But, you know, I mean, it slowly, because of some of his physical limitations, obviously, but, you know, he slowly just began to, I think, his mythology began to disintegrate in the eyes of the fans. I mean, you know, when he was wrestling like Jake Roberts, that was like a pretty big, I hate that kid. But,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But the Big Show, like, they, like, shot him right down to that level.
They did.
So, yeah, I mean, he was kind of just an afterthought here. As a matter of fact, he was with Taker, because remember, like, Taker was going to show him it was like this.
Taker, he was Taker's protege.
It was very, like, these political overtones, because, like, you know, Taker, the locker room leader. Remember? No, it was.
No,
it was, like, remember, Undertaker, the leader of the locker room, he's going to show Big Show how we do this in the WWF. That was, like, that was the legitimate rationale for
this. I didn't realize how much bleed over there was from the behind the scenes, but no, you're absolutely right. That's why I'm laughing, is because you're right on the money.
Now, I want to ask you a question, because we talk about Russo, and we've talked about Triple H a lot on this program.
Okay.
Russo, this is his 11:59, and in many ways, it's, you know, the clock started then ticking on the ascension of Triple H here. Had Russo stayed, look, Triple H eventually would have won, particularly if he still, because knowing Russo, that whole thing with Stephanie, I mean that's he would have gone along with that. So Triple H eventually would have won the battle anyway. And become the star he is today. That would have happened.
Because Russo wouldn't come back in 02 to work for Stephanie. So he would have left eventually as she
grows up. Yeah,
Triple
H would have won that.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going. Work with me here.
Okay.
There would have been a power struggle in the fall of 99. Russo leaving cleared the way for the mega push of Triple H to continue.
Right.
Had Russo stayed, and look, I know he's the bane of a lot of people's existence, and he's rightly criticized for a lot of stupid things he's done, particularly in WCW. But had he stayed, I wonder if someone else would have gotten that top heel spot in the fall of 99. Because there's somebody I think that deserves it.
Somebody who buried him on the fall of WCW DVD, ironically.
Yes. Yeah. It's very interesting, but he at the time, because Russo liked always promoting, he did like always promoting new guys. He always did a kind of a lousy execution of it, but he was always in favor of trying new things.
Right.
Much more so than any other, you know, creative mind really in this company. And I'm talking about Jericho.
Yep.
He kind of came in right before this show. And so the pieces were all set. I'll give him their credit. You know, we always say, hey, you have to have long-term vision. Let's not do knee-jerk things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this is a lot of hindsight being 2020 talk. Jericho did not wrestle on this card, despite having debuted, I think it was like 3 weeks earlier, maybe. I could be wrong. It could be 2.5 weeks. He debuted.
I think it was like August 9th.
Yeah, he debuted, I want to say, like the first Monday in August in this show of, was probably so
was
toward
like nine,
the end.
Nine, wasn't it like 8, 9, 9, something like that? 9, 9, 99, whatever.
Yeah. No, it was 8.
Eight.
It was. I know for a fact that he debuted in August because it was before the show. Yeah. He cuts a promo on the show, which I thought was odd, but here's the thing, and this is hindsight 2020, and it's not probably fair to criticize any of the concerned parties. The Rock wrestled Mr. Ass on the show.
Right.
And Mr. Ass just sucked as a singles guy. I don't care if you pushed him as a babyface or a heel. Mr. Ass, Billy Gunn. First of all, how funny Mr. Ass.
That is pretty good. He didn't have the ability to work that matched his look and his natural charisma.
No, he
didn't. The work ability
was
because
they had tried him as a babyface earlier in the year, remember, against Ken Shamrock, and it didn't work. It was another thing. There was a lot of groans. He wins King of the Ring, which is a terrible pay-per-view, by the way. Mm-hmm. 99 King of the Ring is awful. To me, what I would have done is had the Big Show come. Big Show, again, to go back to that. Triple H isn't going to like what I'm going to say here. But the Big Show should have come in, wins King of the Ring, gets the title shot at SummerSlam.
Okay.
Your next heel then, I would have had him lose to Austin. Your next lead heel to me, very naturally, is not Triple H again. He's getting pushed back again. To me, Jericho is the out. And keep in mind, they never do outsider storylines well at all. But he was a great. He cuts that promo. He interrupts The Rock in Chicago and cuts that amazing promo. Look, he had been typecast. This was a guy who had been cruiserweight champion and TV champion only in WCW.
Yep.
So the idea, even for a real supporter of Jericho like myself, and I'm sure you as well at the time, could never really, when he came in, there was a lot of hype surrounding. People were like, oh, they're going to do Jericho right. In WWF, because he was so held down in WCW.
And comparatively speaking, they did, because he was so misused in WCW.
He was. I mean, the only reason he got over is basically they had those three-hour nitros, and they would send him out there and be like, we have no ideas for you, get yourself over, and he
did.
But it's almost inexcusable that he didn't wrestle. And again...
Oh, yeah. Give him a match on the card, let him beat somebody quick.
Oh, sure, that could have happened. That's inexcusable. But, man... In retrospect, don't you think that after that promo with him and Rock, where because they just didn't do anything with it.
Right.
And they should have wrestled with this show. Jericho, I mean, I know Mr. Ass had been your King of the Ring, and they have to do something with him.
Right.
But have the Road Dog beat him or something. Just, I mean, honestly, because he was back.
Yeah.
Because a month later, Billy Gunn was basically just standing behind Road Dog anyway, saying, we got two words for it.
Yeah, because Road Dogg didn't even wrestle on the show, I don't think. So I'm looking at this.
He was a roving commentator for an Al Snow Big Show match. It's ironic enough. Jericho came out and cut his promo on the Road Dogg on this show. So
should have been a match.
Yeah, to me, you have Jericho. The Rock was obviously.
And that would get heat if he beat the Road Dogg pretty quickly.
Could have done that. I would have, personally, again, hindsight's 2020. Mm-hmm. I would have had him beat Rock on this show. Jericho.
Well, but see, I
would have had him come right in and beat The Rock
and
challenge Austin.
Billy Gunn shouldn't have been King of the Ring, but since he was, you had to get something out of him. And that something clearly was you lose the big match to The Rock and you're never heard from ever again as a singles guy. And that's pretty much what they did.
Yeah.
They cut their losses. You have to do at least a cut your losses blow off with somebody if they're not cutting it. Test versus Shane, the Love Her or Leave Her match. You know, the
match of the night.
Yeah.
Match of the night, in my opinion.
Great
hardcore read my mind.
Match. Yeah, between them. Yeah, Shane with the awesome elbow drop onto the table there, flying elbow.
it's funny. I always like matches that when you go back and look at them, you say, because everything we've said so far has been on what they could have done better.
Right.
Or maybe what we think they should have done. This is one of those matches that, okay, on paper it's not. It's like, come on, test.
Right.
Against, you know, Vince McMahon's son.
Right.
It could not have been executed any better. I mean, you had the Mean Street Posse there with the front. Right. This was great. And it's funny, Test was a guy who I think could have got a legit, like, it was funny because of Paul China got that atrocious push to the Intercontinental title following this. She turns face and wrestled Jarrett. She wins the right. title, that good housekeeping match here in Cleveland. I thought Test was another guy who deserved the Intercontinental. He should have been the guy to beat Jarrett going out the door for the Intercontinental title. This was the beginning, and because we're going to get into these missteps they had in the new millennium, mm-hmm. moving forward with SummerSlams, this was kind of that period where it's like, okay, they think, because here's the other key point. They had clearly destroyed. WCW was done at this point for all intents and purposes. The gap was huge.
Yep.
WCW was not. Bischoff gets 86 around this time period for the first time. Russo comes in. That, to me, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of disagreeing with some of the directions you're going in, guys.
Test is another guy, too, that after they did the excellent storyline later in the year where Stephanie ends up with Triple H, I always felt like they should have done
got
a thing like
something.
You send him away for a little bit, and then he comes back maybe about the time of WrestleMania or something, like this dark, tortured Avenger character guy, and he's just out to bust ass on the corporation.
People would have gotten...
What I'm saying.
You're right. It was one of those things that it's so... What they did is, they had their mind so made up on Triple H.
Right.
I think they just had him beat him the crap out of him on Raw, and then the next thing you knew, Test was in a tag team with Albert.
He was just a brooding bad guy again who didn't want to talk about what happened to him.
That was stupid.
Which was the worst thing in the world.
I'm with you. Look, no one wants to be taken off TV if they're not hurt.
Right.
But that's what you do. You have him, because you need things for Triple H to do down the road.
Yeah.
And
send him away.
You send him away.
Sneak attacks happen and nobody knows who it is or whatever.
By God, he's like, and you could have gotten a lot of mileage out of it. I mean, granted, now what's interesting, and this is going to be an excellent transition when we talk about SummerSlam 2000, had they done what you just said, how would Test and his kind of return for vengeance matched fit in with Triple H, because he does the post-WrestleMania feud with Jericho, which is very good.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't agree with who went over it fully loaded, obviously. That's a different podcast for a different day. But then the love triangle with storyline with Kurt Angle. Test was doomed. Let's just be honest here. His name's Test. He's not a great worker. God rest your soul, Andrew Martin, okay?
But
he was destined to be squeezed as the odd man out and all these things, but they did not certainly did not get the max potential out of him the way they could have.
Well, like the way that I would have done it was I would have had the announcers, when he came back, like start referring to him as Andrew Martin, but then you treat Test as like the comic book alter ego. That this is I didn't say that exactly right, but I mean like Test is like the manifestation then of like his anger and his whatever, and like he's wearing black or whatever it is. But
I mean they clearly just cast him aside and didn't get the max potential out of him. But it would have been interesting. Overall, of the five SummerSlams we're going to talk about here, the 99 is the weakest of 98 to 2002. It's still a good above average SummerSlam.
The weakest of part three, but we got some much better ones coming up, do we not?
Oh, yeah. 2000 to 2002, which we're going to hit on, you know, in the next mini episode, the glory years of SummerSlam, without a doubt.
They are. Look forward to hitting that one.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.